Welcome to Place Matters, a podcast about the intersection of race, place, and poverty. We will explore the belief that the path towards ending inequity and promoting prosperity is through the work of holistic neighborhood development. The content for this podcast is based on over 45 years of experience, expertise, failure, and hope from our organization, Focused Community Strategies, better known as FCS. This is the Foundations series, where we will talk about the big ideas and core frameworks that make FCS, well, FCS. I am Sean Duncan, the Director of Training and Consulting for FCS and the host for Place Matters. Why is it that things don't seem to be getting better? Millions of people, billions of dollars, and countless hours are spent annually to address chronic material poverty and the cascading effects it has on people and communities. But are we making a difference? Are we moving the needle? Is the impact we are having proportionate to the investment we are making? And if not, why not? That's the focus of today's episode. There are a lot of ways to tackle this big topic, but we're convinced that our lack of impact is the result of having the right answer, but asking the wrong question. And if we want to see real, measurable change, we need to change the question. Joining me today to talk about FCS's big idea is one of our lead consultants, David Park.
We're starting this podcast.
Yeah, we are.
And usually I know that's it's the hip, trendy thing to do these days.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
You know, I didn't really think of us as that hip or trendy.
Well, you've not been paying attention.
Maybe not. So my question, Sean, is why are we starting a podcast?
Because there's not enough podcasts out there. I just feel like we need more people in front of microphones doing this.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, actually, like we've been encouraged to do this for a while and have actually resisted it for that very reason. Like we just feel like there's just so much noise, like whether it's like Instagram or TikToks or podcasts or like there's just so many. It's like if you can afford a microphone, you can be an expert on anything.
True.
And so we wrestled for a good bit about do we do this? Do we enter into this space? Just also recognizing there's just so many people out there that we respect and admire who are saying and doing so many good things. We're like, well, what might we kind of be able to add to this conversation? And so the more we wrestle, like, you know, there is a lot of deep value we can add to this conversation. We don't think we're the voice or the only voice that can speak to how you actually end inequity and see poverty ended and see flourishing happen, that there are other great people to be listening to. But we felt like, you know, 45 years in, we've failed a lot. We've learned a lot. We've grown a lot. And we've actually seen measurable impact as well. And we just feel like there's a lot of people that we are co-journeying with in this kind of space. And can we share some of our internal conversations that would benefit people who as they're walking this path too?
Oh, that's great. And it seems like there, like you said, there's a longer history. So the way I understand is FCS, and I'm still a newbie here. I've only been here like a year and a half, but it feels like that FCS has always been ready to do the work more than talk about the work. Mm-hmm, and so what I hear you saying now is like, we're ready to do a little bit of talking about our work.
Yeah. And it's been, and I think it's been affirming and, I don't know the word for it, but it's maybe it's because it's an emotional word and my emotional vocabulary range is too narrow. It's
angry, like, hungry.
I just remember feeling something inside. I don't know what that word is.
Water from eyes, make it stop.
But in the work that our team gets to do, and we get to interact with people in various neighborhoods around the country, and seeing them react and respond to the members of our team and what they know and what they do on a daily basis, that I think at some level we were taking for granted what this 45 years has done to us as an organization and how it's matured us and how it's changed us and how it's shaped us. And it's definitely created a way of thinking, a way of being that is more unique than I've been around about 10 years. And so at some level I kind of feel like I can not see what's around me because I've grown used to it, right? But like we have these moments of, I mean, just this past March, we had open house and had some people kind of pull us aside and be like, I've got some questions about your team and how this works. And so like, we've just had enough of those moments to say, okay, like we don't need to be the only voice or the most important voice, but there is something going on here that's leading to real change in these neighborhoods, that people are on the journey and they're like, you know, just say more, so that like, I just need somebody to give us some encouragement, some wisdom, some insight. And so we're saying, yeah, we don't want to add to the noise, but if we can add value and encouragement, wisdom, ideas from our, if we can save you some time and money, you know, just can we speak into that, you know?
So, well, let's start there, because you said there's lots of good organizations that are doing good work. Mm-hmm. How would you start by describing the good work that FCS is about?
Yeah, the phrase we've had to invent at some level is that our work is about holistic neighborhood development, and we can tease that out more in detail. But it's not where we started, right? I mean, like essentially 45 years ago, we had a founder and some other folks who came face to face with the trauma and oppression of poverty. And at that moment, we're like, my life cannot be lived in any other way but to deal with what's in front of me, right? Having no idea what that meant, where it would lead, or what to do.
Right.
But it just was like, I can't live any other way than a response to these realities now that I've seen it, right?
What kind of realities are you talking about? So what kind of started the journey?
Yeah. You know, really was recognizing young men of color in lower income neighborhoods in the city of Atlanta, and the daily experience of what that meant. The history of disinvestment and segregation, over policing. There's just so many things that had led to these realities. And so like, but that broader context was almost, we were blind to it. We just knew here are these young men, who are suffering under, profoundly unjust conditions. We gotta do something.
So it started off like, we just want to help these young
people are
men.
Hurting. We got to help them.
Yeah.
Right.
It starts off there.
Yeah.
And then you get deeper into it, and I imagine like that's where, you know, you start to pull on this knot, and you're like, "Oh, this
thing's
huge knot." Like, you go, "How do we?"
It's a whole plate of spaghetti here. Yeah.
Right. Right. So what happens then?
Yeah, I mean, it was this kind of like iterative journey of like, oh, that's how it's like, how deep does the rabbit hole go? Kind of thing where it was like initially like, oh, let's work with these young men. It's like, oh, wait a second, there are conditions in the world these young men are dealing with that like. That I can't help them if I don't deal those conditions. So we can work in their schools. Well, schools ain't enough. We got to think about what about their families? Well, let's work with families. I mean, FCS actually used to stand for Family Consulting Services. Like we were trying to work with families. Like, but then we had this growing revelation. Well, we can't support a family or their children or their schools if we're not looking at the homes they're living in and the job opportunities they have. Well, can we do some home improvements or try to do some job training? It's like, well, man, well. And so it just kept growing to be like, it's the neighborhood, like that the outcomes that we keep seeing are directly the result of the neighborhoods in which people are living.
Wow.
We started out with this focus directly on people and how they were hurting or what they needed. And it began to grow to say, oh, this is about places, because how healthy your place is going to determine how healthy people are able to be. If we want to change life outcomes, then we got to change the neighborhoods that people are living in.
Wow, that's a big aha moment in terms of like recognizing you can't help them in isolation of dealing with these other things. Or if you do, I mean, I suppose you could, depending on how big your pockets are. But then, like, how long is your change? Like, the efforts that you make, how long will they stand? It feels like sometimes doing nonprofit and community work can feel like building sandcastles.
Yeah. And I think that's what the realization for us was. It's like, oh, we helped and we helped and we helped and we helped and we helped. Then the waves came in. It's like, oh, everything's back to where it was. And so we just like at some level, we kind of just, there's this kind of awareness of like, this is never going to make any difference. Like it's making the current circumstances more bearable. Like we're, you know, maybe it's like a painkiller of some sorts. Like we're making that injury livable, like you're not as much pain, but it's not healing anything, right? It's not dealing with the centuries and systems of injustice that created the trauma and the hurt and the injuries that we're dealing with, right? I mean, some have kind of made it more pithy to say we're dealing with the symptoms rather than the systems, and like, but we didn't, that wasn't an awareness at first. Like we just assume people are hurting, gotta help them, and said like, well, the help we're providing is really not changing outcomes, not changing any real impact for
so there was just a real ceiling, mm-hmm. a real limit to mm-hmm. the good that you were trying to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and I think the tough part is it seems like when people, you know, have compassion and are doing good and kind things, that seems like that's always the right answer, right? I mean, yeah, that's what we're taught, even when yeah. we're young. Yeah. It's just like,
yeah.
be kind to others, you know, be yeah. generous, be hospitable, be a good person. Mm-hmm. And here we are, mm-hmm. we're doing those things. Yeah, yeah. And it's not that it's not working. It's just right. that the effect of it working just seems so limited.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think that's a challenge. Like, you know, our founder wrote a book called Toxic Charity. And I think some of the unintended consequences of a book like that is people who now feel like they're kind of the charity police. Oh, well, that's not how you're supposed to do it. And that's toxic charity. You know, like, it's like, no, we're not out here to criticize people who care deeply and are generous. Like, generosity is always a good thing. Like, we want to encourage people to stop looking away from the harsh realities of your city and turn towards these things, face these things, see these things, be generous, care, get involved. But there's also a recognition that person-to-person generosity isn't going to change the long arc of the systems, right? Person-to-person generosity isn't going to lead to life outcomes that are different, right? And so we had to come to this point, like, well, glad we're doing this, but if our goal is to help someone hurt less, generosity is fine, right? But if our goal is doing away with inequity
yeah.
and dealing away with oppression, and if our goal is to see people flourish,
right,
then we've got to deal with place and not just people and the hurts they might be facing.
Okay, so let me ask some questions there, because there are lots of ways that people work towards improving a place.
Okay, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So there's all kinds of ways of looking at community development, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. and but you didn't use the words community development. Mm-hmm. So what's different from holistic neighborhood development mm-hmm. versus sort of community development at large?
Yeah, it's I jokingly kind of call this like Goldilocks dilemma, where we feel like the words that are available to us describe what we're doing. It's like, yeah, it's too hot, it's too cold, it's lukewarm, it's not really just. So in some of those terms, like community development, if someone asks, do you guys do community development? I will say yes. Unless they're looking for a deeper, longer conversation, that's right. plenty. You know, like oftentimes, like on the sidelines of the soccer field, like, hey, you know, hey, man, what do you do? It's like, I'm a nonprofit world. And they're like, well, what do y'all do? And I'm like, it also depends on how introverted I'm feeling that day. Where I'm like, sometimes I'll just be like, affordable housing. Like, people get that. And they're like, oh, that's cool. That's great. And then we just watch the soccer game. And sometimes I'm like, I bet they're down for more conversation. I'll try to say something more nuanced or deep. And they're just smile and nod. I'm like, so go kick the
yeah.
ball, you know.
Yay, cool. But, yeah, touchdown. Yeah.
So community development is one of those terms. It's like, yeah, we do that. But also, like, and so we're involved in, you know, this shout out to our friends at CCDA, Christian Community Development Association. But we've found kind of in that space, it is a broad category of people who care about poverty and injustice and are trying to be involved. And we're in alignment with those folks. Like, that's what we're about too.
Sure, sure.
But as far as like the industry of practice of what they're doing in those communities day in and day out, we've kind of found like most of the people here aren't doing what we're doing day to day. And then there's people that talk about, maybe you guys are doing asset-based community development. That's a little bit more specific of a qualifier. And we would go, yeah, that's getting a little closer, but if community development is too broad, then the ABCD is a little bit too specific, like where we feel like that is a lens by which you can partner with people in a place. But we're looking beyond just the asset-based interventions and saying, like, there are system-wide, structure-wide changes that have to happen, which include internal assets of neighborhood and external investments that have to happen to see the long-term kind of change. And so the one that feels, those are the, like, too hot, too cold. The one that we feel like is lukewarm, you know, still not right and good, but it's like, you know, closer.
In the middle, yeah.
It's like, oh, you guys are into place-based development.
Right.
Well, yeah, that's what we do. But even in that, I think what we've seen is that, like, some place-based development is still based on what you might call, like, point interventions. Like, we do affordable housing, or we do economic development, or we do healthcare initiatives, or, like, that they're still thinking about what they're doing through the lens of this neighborhood that they're doing the work within.
Right, a single lane,
yeah.
a single channel of deliver, like, services delivered to that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we have just kind of, I think what we see in that is it's still, maybe this is the way to say it, some place-based affordable housing nonprofits if you ask them what problem they're solving for, they're solving affordable housing.
Right.
And we would say the problem we're solving for is a neighborhood problem. Mm, right.
Okay.
And we use housing to solve for a neighborhood problem. Right. And so whether it's healthcare, education, housing, whatever it happens to be, the lens we're always using is the ecosystem of a neighborhood and how do we do interventions that holistically impact the ecosystem and not just the housing or the jobs or kind of whatever the category might be.
Well, and I think it's maybe because of FCS's unique skill set because we do mixed income housing, we do economic development, mm-hmm. and we do neighborhood engagement. A lot of nonprofits just do one thing, mm-hmm. or they might have one sort of focus, and so mm-hmm. they might miss some of these other things in terms of how they affect the neighborhood. They might just think, mm-hmm. well, our thing is affecting the neighborhood positively, yeah. we think, but we may not be thinking about how it affects some of these other mm-hmm. other ecosystems that affect the neighborhood.
Yeah. I mean, I think one way we would say it is maybe that what truly would make you a place-based community development organization is that everything you're doing is through the lens of how it affects the entire place. Because we've interacted with folks that would say, "Hey, we're place-based developers," but the impacts they're tracking are only in the lives of the people who are directly connected to their programs or their work.
Oh, okay. But so if you live in our house, we're tracking that.
Yeah.
But we're not thinking about who lives around your house.
But if you're doing place-based development, you have to have a check on the entire neighborhood. Wow. Whether people know your name, live in your houses, engage in your programs, you're asking entire neighborhood health questions, right? And not just who is in our programs. Which is why we kind of like started to say, well, yes, we're in the place-based development world. Without question, we believe the path forward to real change in our cities, to real change in ending inequity is through place-based interventions. Like that is, we are convinced of that, right? Mm-hmm. But so part of why we were like, getting a little more specific and saying, well, what we would say is what we do is holistic neighborhood development. It's only because a little bit of a need to qualify that in the industry of place-based development, we're always thinking, how does this impact the ecosystem as a whole? Not just did someone who needed an affordable unit get an affordable unit to rent, right? That's a good thing. But we're always trying to measure anything in awareness of how it affects the whole of the neighborhood.
So that right there, I feel like that perspective mm-hmm. change, that paradigm shift is what makes FCS very different in terms mm-hmm. of saying because the question that may have started this is if you're working with one family, you're thinking, okay, what does this family mm-hmm. need to survive the next mm-hmm. day, morning? How do they get healthy? Mm-hmm. And they're like, okay. They need better schools or a better house or more solid job or whatever the case may be. But it seems like the questions shifted mm-hmm. here, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, we're not asking what they need.
Yeah. And I think that's where like one of our, kind of pithy statements is that, we're providing the right answer to the wrong question, which we did for a long time, right? And providing the right answer of generosity to the wrong question, as you just said, is like, well, what do people need,
right?
Now the answer to that question can be really small, simple food pantry, just feed the hungry, you know? And we can kind of condescendingly, kind of pat people in the head for giving away free food. And that's real nice,
Right.
But there's also people who do major, huge affordable housing developments, that are still kind of fundamentally oriented around this needs-based question of like, there's brokenness, there's need, there's hurt, there's injustice, and we've got to provide access to greater, more sustainable quality affordable housing. And even though I would agree with all of that, it still can be done in, I am acting on behalf of your best interests, I am acting on behalf of your needs. It still can be an external actor upon a neighborhood, to a neighborhood, right, rather than kind of coming alongside with. And that for us is a huge part of the distinguisher of what we would believe is kind of where we would plant our flag on the ground is to say this has to be in deep, intimate proximity and relationship with people on the ground. It can't just be done as like, hey, it's a poor neighborhood, we need more housing. Or, hey, it's a poor neighborhood, we got to improve the schools. Hey, it's a poor neighborhood, we got to see if we can get more jobs there. Like, sure, we need to work in all of those sectors, but it's still and deciding on behalf of type of thing.
Well, and it sort of clarifies the generosity question for me, mm-hmm. at least the mm-hmm. way we're asking it, is to not just be the provider of what they need, mm-hmm. but the co-creator,
yeah.
right? Almost
yeah.
like saying, mm-hmm. not just what do you need, but mm-hmm. what is this place, what's good for the place,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and how do we become good neighbors in making this place mm-hmm. better, which is a much yep. more complex,
yeah.
But to your point, yep. it's necessary because
yep.
One of the sort of tenets that I'm starting to see really clearly is you cannot you can't serve your way out of poverty,
no,
right?
No, yeah.
It's just
yeah.
There's just an endless sort of black hole of mm-hmm. of charity and contributions and energy used that goes to waste unless and until we know our neighbors and invite mm-hmm. them into this process and know them by name. Like we mm-hmm. just can't,
yeah.
like to your point, we can't do this without proximity
yeah.
And,
yeah.
and relationship.
And I think that's the better question, right? If the question we want to get away from is what is needed or what do you need, whether that needs question is based on the individual level or even the neighborhood level, the better question is how do we co-create flourishing, right?
Wow.
How do we
yeah.
work together to build places that are healthy, that produce healthy people and healthy children and healthy adults and healthy economies? And so that, again, that our foundational conviction is that your place, some will say it, your zip code determines more about your future than your genetic code, right? That your
right.
where you live, where you're growing up. And so for us, it's saying the question needs to become not just what does this place need, even when we shift to places, but it's how do we co-create flourishing? How do we co-create a thriving place together? Mm-hmm. And the together are residents of that neighborhood, cities who oversee neighborhoods, nonprofits who work in those neighborhoods, schools who serve kids in those neighborhoods, that co-creating that we is all, right?
Mm.
And those that get left out of that the most are the residents of those places, right? And that's the piece where we would also say, like, you can't move forward unless you've been given permission by that neighborhood to move forward and you are in partnership with that neighborhood. And you are in alignment with them for the future they prefer for themselves.
Okay, so why don't, like, if this is, I mean, I don't know mm-hmm. at what year we arrived at this solution. It sounds
yeah.
like a good one, but like,
yeah.
why don't, what took us there? Or why don't people find this way sooner?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good question. I think there are some just broader cultural forces that we won't shock anybody. We're a bit more of an individualistic culture rather than a collectivistic one, right? That we tend to view success or failure through the lens of the person.
Mm-hmm.
So much of the language around poverty is language of blame and shame.
Mm.
Or from the other side, it's a language of pity. It is still this assumption of the individual, their hurt, their need, their failure. I mean, we even kind of have almost a lens of immorality when it comes around to
right.
being poor. There's something wrong with you
right.
that someone else must fix. There's a fundamental view of how we view poverty and those who experience it that's really unhealthy, right?
Yeah.
And as long as that framework lives unchecked or unchallenged, even the best intentioned person who recognizes the history of racism and injustice, like even people fully aware of the history of what our country has been and done to low-income people of color, like you can still be functioning out of this kind of the individualistic mindset of how do I either give to them charity or how do I help them become an entrepreneur and start their own business? Like it still is this thought of like, the individual is the key to change. And we said the unit of change, the key to change is neighborhood. And we would never say, don't invest in that young person or don't help that entrepreneur succeed. Like I would absolutely pour into people. There's no
right.
way of divorcing these two ideas completely. But as we're pouring into those individuals, are we doing it with this an awareness of the environmental ecosystem in which that person is born, raised, and living? Those are the things we've got to change. We've got to change those environmental systems.
Yeah, so I think that's really to see neighborhoods as ecosystems that are causing poverty
mm-hmm.
is a paradigm shift that people need mm-hmm. to make. Mm-hmm. And then I also think that there's a lot to be said for the fact that FCS working in these different mm-hmm. channels together, like mm-hmm. being having a department that's dedicated to neighborhood engagement and yeah. then also working economic development.
Yeah.
I think that probably gave us enough perspective to realize mm-hmm. these things operating in silos would probably still do a lot of harm.
Yeah, and I think that, and that's the challenge is like, you know, so to be really clear, we believe the only way to bring about change in neighborhoods is through holistic, comprehensive, integrated work. But what we're not trying to say is that one entity's got to hold all of that.
Yeah, that's right? good. That's good.
We're not even trying, right? Like,
and we can't do everything.
No. Like, yeah, yeah. I mean, like, and so the main kind of pillars we're working within are mixed income housing, economic development, and neighborhood engagement. What's not included in there is education.
Right. Or
what's
healthcare.
What's not included is healthcare. You know, yeah. there's some really massive things that if you leave them unaddressed, you're joking if you think you can change a neighborhood, right? And so the way that we go about this is by recognizing, know what you do. Do it well, and doing it well means doing it in an awareness, again, of how it impacts the entire neighborhood ecosystem, right? That if you're into housing, but you want to be a place-based person, you're not into housing, you're into neighborhoods, right? If you're into economic development, but you want to do place-based work, you need to tell yourself you're not into economic development. What you're into is neighborhoods. And that business you're starting, that house you're building, that clinic you're starting, you are in the neighborhood business, right? Which all of a sudden changes from a two-dimensional view to a three-dimensional view
right.
or to a 360 view, whatever your metaphor is, all of a sudden your perspective expands. So that doesn't mean you need to start doing everything, but it does need you ought to be aware of everything. Like, you need to have that level of breadth and depth so that, like, with education, we have a great partner we're working with in education. You know, like we are partnering really well to see these other aspects addressed. So we don't have to do everything, but we need to be aware pretty robustly of what... our measurement is not just how do people who live in the homes we build fare, you know, which is a fine question, but we're trying to check, is the neighborhood healthy? How's the neighborhood doing? Because that's the most fundamental question.
So over the course, this is our first episode for the foundations of all mm-hmm. this. So mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. when you just express that, I'm thinking, oh, there's going to be a lot to talk about.
there is.
I guess is there a framework for how we're thinking about this so that people who are interested and wanting to know more, like what, how is this going to be laid out? And like, what mm-hmm. are the sort of big pillars that you're talking about? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let me give a definition, our working definition of holistic neighborhood development, and know that it's in process. This is a living document that we're still working through now. And it will kind of give a little bit of like teasers of some of the places where we're heading with some of this work on the podcast. So holistic neighborhood development is a place-based, people-centered process that creates social, structural, and economic flourishing through integrated interventions that prioritize the power of local residents. So it's a lot of words, very, very dense, right? And we'll have it in the show notes. But all of that is like that, those words together are kind of what will get stretched out and teased out over the coming series that we will do. And this current series, what we're going to look at is really as we call it, the foundations. We're just really looking at the core beliefs and values that hold it all together. In the following seasons or series of this podcast, we're going to get into more detail about, okay, what do you mean by social cohesion? Like these three areas, like what do you mean by economic vitality? What do you mean by, so we're really going to tease out how do we actually do this work? But in this kind of first season or series, we're really just going to look at what are our core values? What are the big picture ideas? Like this idea that the neighborhood is a unit of change. In our next episode, we're really going to kind of talk about the history of why that's true and some of the evidence and data that supports that claim that we're working with. But that's the core of what this is about, this idea of holistic neighborhood development that is our conviction that that's our way forward, that if you look at our cities, our world, and if we don't want to just help people who are hurting, but we want to do away with inequity, we want to do away with a legacy of racism and structural and oppression, like if we want to see that happen, this way of engaging neighborhoods is the way forward. This is how we're going to do that.
Man, I think that's really inspiring. I mean, we're saying that FCS is 45 years in, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. I feel like You're just getting started.
I know. Yeah. Which is really like we observed, it wasn't that long ago, maybe 4 or 5 years, and it was pre-pandemic. So that's my best timestamp of like, there is something about the spirit of this organization that feels like a startup, even though we're like, our staff has doubled in the last couple of years. Our budget has doubled the last few years. Like that's, and we've been around for 40 years, but there's also a sense of like, we're just getting started, right? Because there is this growing awareness of what we're up to is so big, right? And I think for me, that's what is energizing about this organization and being a part of it, is we have chosen a mission that is so much bigger than what any one organization could realistically ever achieve. We're always on the edge of learning. We're always on the edge of innovating, because we know this is beyond the work of one person or one organization. And so I do kind of feel like we're turning this corner into a whole new era of life together. And so in some ways, this podcast and other things that we're doing are a way of inviting other people to say, this is the path worth being on.
Yeah.
And again, we love generosity. We love crying out for justice and reform and change in policies. And we would say yes 100 times over to all that stuff. And we would say, but can we pull that down into the ground of real neighborhoods and co-create a different reality in those neighborhoods? Because healthy places will produce healthy outcomes. But that's, and if we've built places that are producing unhealthy outcomes, we can rebuild them to produce healthy ones. And that's what this work is for us. And that's what we want to see.
Oh, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. So the wrong question is, what do you need?
What do you need?
The right question is how can we co-create a flourishing neighborhood?
Yeah.
You know, I can imagine that a lot of the people who are interested in the kind of work FCS does are nonprofits and community developers and churches. But, you know, I'll be honest, I've been in the church world for a while, and the last 5 to 10 years have been really hard. And a lot of people are discouraged and sort of running dry.
Yeah.
The energy that you're bringing, like the excitement and the encouragement and the inspiration that you have, do you have like words? I mean, not to say that what you just said wasn't encouraging enough, but like, what do you? How would you sort of uplift people who are sort of like feeling a little dry or like reimagine the work of development, and how can we others join in this work of holistic neighborhood development?
Yeah, the good news is going to sound like bad news. So hang on for a second. I think the good news is you won't live to see this resolved.
Oh,
right?
Wow.
It's this work will outlast your participation in it. This is not just lifelong for me. This is generations long work. So the reason I feel like that's good news is to say, it's not all on your shoulders. Like this is going to take a long time. We're talking decades of work. We're not, I mean, like, so we've been in the neighborhood we're in now, historic South Atlanta, for just over 20 years. And we're beginning to see some really profound and beautiful transformation. So to me, the long arc of it is the good news. You can chill out a little bit, right? Calm down, recognize, yeah, it's hard. Yeah, it's long term. Therefore, pace yourself, right? I don't have to sprint from here to there. Like I can hold somebody's hand and we can walk and talk and dialogue about it. I don't talk when I'm running. I don't even talk when I'm jogging. You know, so like I can walk with you and have some conversation with you, and we can pursue this future together. And the other encouragement to me is that like it really does have to start at the pace and the place of relationship. That we have a lot of people come visit FCS and tour the neighborhood and see all the work that we're doing. We love hosting groups for that. But the danger is always they're seeing a 45-year-old organization who's 20 years into this neighborhood. Right.
Right.
And we like, I wish we had, like, maybe this is the new Apple goggles or whatever. We'll be able to figure out how to like give people a virtual immersion into where we were in 2001. And could we walk up around then and say like, yeah, we didn't get here and just sprint to accomplish this in 6 months, right? And the thing is where this started was a handful of people who made up the Civic League, some elderly residents who've been around for a long time, said, will you co-create with us? Will FCS, will you come here? Will you work with us in this neighborhood and make things better? And we were able to say, yeah, let's do that. And so it started with neighboring, you know, a few people move in who are still here. And we start sitting on front porches. We start walking with people. We start attending the Civic League meetings and asking questions, making observations, and beginning to say, well, what do you want the future of this to look like? And hear them tell the stories of what it once was and the history of what this neighborhood used to be. And say, well, how do we move toward a future that looks a lot more like the past? Like, how do we restore and reweave that which has been before? And so my encouragement would be, yeah, it always starts small. Like, it always starts relationally. I'm actually really nervous when I see powerful, really well-resourced people get energized really quickly to make some change because they have the ability to change things really fast because they got enough money and influence to do it. And that always makes me nervous. It's like, no, you need to struggle. You need to go. It needs to be small. It needs to be simple for a good while. And so if you're listening to this and you feel like I budget's real small, team is real small, I don't think we can, you know, it's like, actually, that's good, right? Because too much too fast is going to overpower the neighborhood rather than empower the neighborhood for this. And so, like, if you've got the ability to walk with some people and listen, you're perfectly suited to get this started.
Wow. That's exciting. Mm-hmm. I mean, I work here and I'm inspired by by this. And I think as this podcast grows and we share more of our story and information, I think it's going to be just a huge encouragement to other people who are in this work.
Yeah. Well, we're here to, and this is we're hiking together. We're all winded. We're all trying to see the beautiful view at the top. And like, if there's ways that we can walk with people, that's why we're here. That's what we love to do. Place Matters is produced by Focused Community Strategies, whose mission is to partner with under-resourced neighborhoods to provide innovative and holistic development that produces flourishing communities and God's shalom. Place Matters is hosted by FCS's training and consulting team known as the Lupton Center. If you would like to inquire about our training and consulting services, please reach out to us via our website or find us on LinkedIn and social media. This information can be found in the show notes. If you'd like to watch these episodes, the videos can be found on our YouTube channel. And if you like these episodes, please share them on social media. Your support means a lot to us. This show was edited by Tim Rhodes with music by Eric North. Special thanks to David Park and Becca Malpass at FCS for their work in organizing and recording these sessions. We'd also like to say thank you to our partner, Lilly Endowment, whose Thriving Congregations grant has made this podcast possible.